Part 4. Gone. Fire is the test of gold, adversity of strong men. Seneca. G-59. Drive-in, Birchwood, Colorado. Henry McCarthy and Walter Byrd re-entered the bar area at New Care Grillin' as the focus of everyone's attention, albeit only momentarily. The sound of the loud staff-only door opening, and even more so closing behind them, was enough to distract dozens of patrons from what they had been looking at before it interrupted their focus. But even the reappearance of Henry and Mr. Byrd didn't hold it for long. Pleased by this relative lack of interest, as he would have been at any time given his typical aversion to public attention, but particularly so in this moment, due to the concerns he'd held that every single patron would be waiting at the door to ask what was going on, Henry was nevertheless surprised. Their quick exit in pursuit of Phil Norris and the stranger they now knew to be his lawyer, Chip Petrovich, had occurred under the intense gaze of every eyeball at the bar, due in large part to the dramatic and borderline violent manner in which Phil had pushed Chip into the hidden corridor. Henry noted with similar pleasure and surprise that the booth at the McCarthy table was still vacant, and that his drink was still there, with the patrons having respected its sanctity despite the apparent absence of a staff member. The area beside the table was typically manned whenever Henry or Clark weren't around, to protect Phil's business of charging selfie-seeking visitors a pretty penny for their chance to secure a photo at one of Birchwood's few famous indoor backdrops. It didn't take long for Henry to understand quite why everyone's attention was elsewhere, and Mr. Byrd's sudden halting as he walked towards the table came as a sign that he had already seen it. Struggling to see through the standing crowd from his lower vantage point, Henry asked Byrd to step out of the way, so he could wheel himself past the herd and towards the table, which always granted him a perfect view of the bar's big screen TVs, regardless of how many people were filling the floor. Henry was able to navigate his way between the door and the table without Mr. Byrd's assistance in clearing a path, only because the large crowd were all pressed forward against the bar itself, leaning in for a closer view, and even more so to hear what was being said. Having been taken aback by their lack of visual interest in his return, only now did Henry consciously notice how quiet the crowd really was. He couldn't hear much coming from the TV just yet, but as soon as he reached his table and saw the screens, he called for Mr. Byrd to look for the remote and to climb up on the counter to raise the volume if he couldn't quickly find it. A young man near Mr. Byrd asked if he could help, and both Henry and Byrd encouraged him to jump on up and hold his finger on the volume up button on the side of the leftmost TV until it was as loud as it would go. Ordinarily, the three TVs in the bar area would be tuned to three different stations, while all of those in the adjacent grill would be tuned to ACN. In the bar, Phil's evening regulars tended to prefer sports to news, and like any good barman, he always made sure to give them what they wanted. When only one live game was airing, Phil would always show it on the central screen with ACN playing to the left and a sports news station on the right. Every single one of the bar's many booths was equipped with a self-contained speaker system, which allowed its occupants to select their preferred audio feed. This innovation often drew compliments from patrons of all kinds, as it allowed people to talk at the bar area without either having to shout to be heard over any of the TVs or having to worry that they were irritating those who wanted to listen in. Today, with the world's focus squarely on Buenos Aires, Phil had tuned two of the three TVs to regular news stations. ACN filled the leftmost screen, as usual, but the sports news on the right was now joined by Blitz News in the middle. The Blitz logo was enough to bring forth an involuntary rage response within Henry for all the organization had done to make his son's life hell during the days of the IDA leak, when he had been in hospital and unable to help them deal with it. He would never be able to thank Emma enough for keeping the boys afloat, and the way Blitz Media's various properties had reported on her since Jan Geller's return to a prominent role angered him as much as anything else. He tried not to let this bother him too much, knowing Phil had no doubt stuck Blitz on one of the screens purely because it was such a popular news outlet, no matter how inexplicably in Henry's eyes, in the same way he would sometimes show hockey if none of what he considered the real sports were airing live. Henry knew it was no reflection of a personal like for Blitz on Phil's part, and had to remind himself of this to quell the anger at seeing that damn logo. Liking Blitz would have been a friendship deal-breaker for Henry at this point, even after how long he'd known Phil, on account of just how low the network had gone in raking up dirt on his family over recent years. The TV currently showing sports news was utterly neglected, with everyone in New Care Grillin's bar area gazing up at two almost identical feeds from Blitz News and ACN. Both relayed live footage from the meeting room at the ICA building in Buenos Aires, where similar headlines on each screen told the viewers that William Godfrey was about to begin his much-anticipated inauguration speech, with the vacant podium shown from slightly different angles based on where Blitz and ACN's cameras were located. The imminence of Godfrey's speech, Henry realized, was quite understandably why the crowd had been too focused on the TVs to inquire about Phil's interaction with the publicly unknown Chip. The only sound blaring through any of the speakers came from ACN, but sudden movement on the Blitz feed led to calls for a change. Even Henry couldn't argue against allowing this, as frustrating as it was, since none other than John Cole had just stepped directly in front of the Blitz news camera to engage in some friendly chat with their reporter. Mr. Bird gave the same young helper as last time permission to climb on the counter once again to mute ACN and raise the volume on Blitz. This brought some cheers and applause for the man's help, but Henry could only roll his eyes as Cole's self-serving and transparently Machiavellian words filled the bar. Fortunately, he spoke for only a few minutes before Chairman Godfrey finally showed up. Thank the Lord for small mercies, Henry thought to himself. An awkward moment between the two powerful Englishmen preceded Cole's eventual taking of his seat, but from there the stage was Godfrey's. Henry didn't bother asking Mr. Bird or his young helper to switch the volume back to ACN at this point. The audio feed was now coming in directly from Godfrey's microphone, so it would have been pointlessly childish to insist upon this for the sake of satisfying some personal Blitz boycott. Had no one else been present, Henry would have most certainly asked Bird to make the change, but he didn't want to do so when it would have unnecessarily inconvenienced every other patron who just wanted to hear what Earth's elected representative had to say about the immediate prospects of genuine interplanetary cooperation with New Kerguelen. As well as this, the core part of Godfrey's speech, Henry was also interested to hear what Godfrey would have to say about Dan and Tara's absence from the room. He didn't know quite how much they might have told Godfrey earlier in the day, unsure whether Dan would have stuck with the plan of keeping the full details of his and Billy Kendrick's enlightening exploration of the architect's outpost from Godfrey until after the speech, or if he might have called an audible and moved the revelation forward. This was the first thing Godfrey covered, and he did so just about as diplomatically and carefully as anyone could have imagined, and as those who knew him well had fully expected. Nothing about the comments seemed dramatic or likely to cause any kind of issue, so Henry was more than satisfied and greatly relieved when Godfrey quickly moved on to the main business of the day. But just a few sentences into Godfrey's speech, as he introduced a solemn vow which he never got to fully deliver, a brilliant white flash filled two of the bar's three TVs. People jumped back in an instinctively defensive response, with a handful immediately running for the exits. Given that he was in a wheelchair, Henry felt glad that he had retreated all the way to his table. If he hadn't, the sudden backwards rush of his fellow patrons could have been more than a little painful. This flash lasted as long as every other usually did, or was as brief as every other, to be more precise, and a perfectly in-sync collective gasp filled the air as live pictures returned to the TVs and revealed that Chairman Godfrey was gone. Even the rightmost TV, broadcasting a sports news station, quickly changed to coverage of the incredible developing situation, as was often the case in emergency situations. Henry didn't think this was quite an emergency, since he fully trusted the messenger's motives in all situations and knew that no harm would befall Godfrey at their hands. But as was disturbingly often the case, Henry also knew that human reactions could create emergencies all of their own, and that anything which raised questions about the messengers, especially today of all days, could be seized upon by the sensationalist media in a manner that would create societal unease at best, and disorderly hysteria at worst. While the sport news station played unbroken live footage absent of any overlaid data, and ACN ran with an understandable initial headline of Alien Flash Takes Godfrey from ICA, the headline on Blitz News made it clear that Jan Geller and her underlings wanted to waste absolutely no time in whipping up a frenzy. Horror in Argentina. Messengers strike again. Quite what again was supposed to mean, even if the messengers had struck this time, Henry McCarthy had no idea. But as he tried to make sense of the events in Buenos Aires over the hysterical ranting of the station's in-studio talent and occasional shrieks from the on-location reporter, he knew that this kind of nonsense could only bring trouble.